Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 22 of Season 4 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast, where we take a hilarious and poignant journey through the 1989 Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan rom-com, When Harry Met Sally, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Brett Stillo, formerly of 5 Minutes of Banzai and 5 Minutes of Trouble. Welcome back to the show, Brett.
Thank you, Rob. It's very nice to be here. Happy Tuesday, everyone. And how are you doing today?
I never said that.
Oh, okay. Never mind. Moving right along.
Wait, that's right. I did say that. Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. But it's Tuesday, and we're in minute of 22 of When Harry Met Sally. And I figured out where they're going. But with your, you gave me a clue, but things are coming together. The backstory is flowing here.
Do you want to let us in? Do you want us to let us in on the secret, or we're waiting? We'll get there a little bit later.
I don't know if I'm deciding whether it would come later in the minute. Right now.
So let's wait a little bit. We'll keep people in suspense. There you go.
Yes. This is the big reveal. But there right now, we're still on the plane.
That's right. So minute 22 begins with Harry finishing his diatribe and ends with Harry trying to explain himself again. He's very good at that. I mean, yesterday, as we talked about, we had a very dialogue-rich minute. And once again, we have another dialogue-heavy, rich minute. Where Harry continues what he's saying. You know, he said, you know, he was cut off mid-sentence yesterday. So basically his whole line was, somewhere between 30 seconds and all night is your problem. And Sally turns to him and says, I don't have a problem. Yeah, you do. And that's basically the end of their conversation at this point while they're on the plane. Okay. Harry is very, very confident in the way that he's talking here. You know, there's absolutely no question about that, the way that he does that. And I love the fact that he has this drink in his hand, you know, that he's just sitting there, you know, holding this cup of, who knows, it could be seltzer, soda water, whatever people call that, club soda. It could be booze. It could just be water. It could be any of those things. It's a clear liquid. That's more or less what it is. So it got me thinking, you know, here we're on a plane and, you know, apparently he's been given a drink. Okay. He got a, what they call a complimentary drink, which, you know, we all know it's not really complimentary because you're already paying for the, you know, you're paying exuberant numbers for the seat, you know, so they're now going to throw in a little drink along the way. You know, I mean, nowadays it's very different. You know, I was on an international flight going both ways between Israel and America back in July. And on the way there, they only gave out bottles of water to everybody. And then at some point I saw somebody drinking a Coke and I was like, that's really weird. Where did they get the Coke? And then I learned the secret that you have to go and ask for one and then they'll give you one. So on my way home, I knew to go to the galley and ask. And then I was able to get, you know, a little bottle of Coke or a can of Coke. I'm trying to remember if it was a can or a bottle. Doesn't really make a difference. But do you know how far back the idea of in-flight service goes?
Oh, wow.
Like, when do you think the first airline meal was?
Oh, you know, that's – oh, I don't like you anymore, man. That's a good question. That is one of those. I know I have read it before. I can't remember. And, you know, I mean, I'm a great student of the history of aviation. So, you know, I know it was, you know, it develops over time. You know,
if Jim is listening, I wonder if Jim knows this answer.
Jim what? O'Kane. Absolutely. He's right now. Jim, if you are listening, I know you are screaming, you know, American Airlines, 1931, it was a February, but yeah, you know, I mean, I pretty early on, you know, I'm sure there were some kind of refreshments. This is an interesting one because I think real early airline flights are prohibition. I'm picturing Ford Trimotors. And as you may know, like the first air flight attendants were actually nurses in full nurse uniforms. So I imagine they wouldn't have served booze on a flight in the 20s. That would have been a little too risky. But I'm going to stop now, Rob, because I'm going super tangential.
No, I love listening to your ideas here, especially since I know the answer. You know, I see where you're going, and you know,
you're making me squirm, Rob, because this is almost like the plot of a movie where some wise guy at a fledgling airline in 1927 says, "We can serve alcohol because we're above state lines." And that'll be a big draw. So, long story short, I can't remember. Tell me.
Okay. So the very first in-flight meal that was pre-packed, they were cold lunch boxes priced at 3 shillings each. And it was served on a flight from between London and Paris in 1918, October 1918. The airline was known as the Handley Page Airline.
Okay.
And then four years later, on a Daimler Airway, which later became part of British Airways, they would have the passengers would be greeted when they boarded with glasses of fruit juice. Nice. So that was the first time that they gave drinks out there. Then in 1936, United Airlines introduced the world's first flight kitchen.
Wow.
Okay, where they were starting to prepare hot meals, which they would give to people, you know, along the way. And then, once during World War II, they had to try and figure a way to, you know, serve troops meals on long flights. So they figured out the whole idea of doing frozen food preparation. You know, they developed a quick frozen pre-cooked method of food preparation, packaging and shipping so that they can give in-flight meal services. That was actually TWA that did that. I mean, there's a whole history of the whole thing, and it's very, very fascinating. I don't want to get into too much about the whole thing, but one of the things that they say here, which I found really interesting, and this goes back to something last week that we didn't discuss, was the fact that apparently because of the altitude, sometimes it changes a person's taste buds, and certain things taste better when you're on a flight. And apparently tomato juice supposedly tastes better when you're up at a higher altitude. Okay. So that actually makes sense why Sally possibly, you know, ordered, you know, she ordered a Bloody Mary, but that's pretty much, you know, tomato juice and vodka. So,
right.
You know, so it's possible. I don't know.
I will tell you that watching this sequence, I got a little nostalgic for, airline travel 20 years ago, 30 years ago. And it was, you know, it was a little more fun. And yeah, like you said yesterday, hey, you want my seat? Oh, there's a spare seat. Yeah. Anybody sitting here? You know? And it's like,
nowadays it's like, you can't sit in someone else's seat, you know?
Yeah. That's the... Yeah. And everything's, yeah. And you know, you're not even allowed to, you know, you're only allowed to get up and go to the restroom. You can't wait at the, and you know, yeah, we don't have to go over there.
I still remember in 1992, it must've been, I think it was like February 1992. I was on I was waiting for a flight from Denver back to Detroit, and the flight was overbooked, and there were people willing to pay to take other people's seats. And you know, I wasn't in any rush to get back home, so I told them that I'm willing to be bumped without a problem, and they put me on the list, but on the standby list. But in the end, they didn't want to let me do it. And then someone said, "Here, I'll give you $500 for your ticket." And I was like, "Okay, no problem.
Yeah.
You know, I've already paid for my ticket. I'll go on the next flight." And the person at the ticket countering, and remember, this is 1992, said to me, "You can't do that. You're not allowed to fly under an assumed name." And so, I got a little worried at that point, that I would be stuck in Denver and I wouldn't have a way of getting home. So I decided I wasn't going to take his offer, and I was pleading with them. I said, I'm still willing to be on standby. Let someone else go instead of me. And they're like, nope, you can't do that. And again, this is pre 9/11. After 9/11, forget about that type of stuff,
Exactly.
for sure.
Exactly.
Okay,
Yeah.
another trivia question for you. When did they start serving peanuts on airplanes? And what airline? Again, Jim probably knows this, and he's upset that he wasn't on this week.
And he's I'm oh, he's probably so disappointed with me. I want to make a joke about Dumbo Airlines. I don't know, that might offend some elephants. Man, yeah. I mean, bags of picks, mixed nuts. Did planners ever have an airline? Do tell.
No. So it was 1971. Southwest Airlines decided to start serving peanuts as a mid-flight snack. And obviously, here we are 52 years later, and it's not as popular as it was then, but it's still a very known fact that that's what people do.
We're lucky to get peanuts. I
Yes.
think the last couple of flights I've been on have been some very dry little tiny crackers. But quick question for you about the scene, and I'm not
Oh
going to
wait, we're
cheat
talking
and
about
look
the
at.
we're talking about the scene also.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
But it ties into the more important subject of airline travel. Are those plastic? Those look like actual glasses that Harry and Sally have got. And I
I
was
don't
just
know. It looked to me like it was one of those, the typical airline plastic cups.
could be.
That's
It
what it
was
looked
just
like to
like,
me. I could be wrong.
yeah, something about the way he was like swirling the ice. It was almost like, wow, is that an actual cocktail glass? And I could like review the minute, but
I don't
it just.
recall that in, that in the 80s they would actually give out glasses.
Yeah,
It's not like you go to a hotel and you get a glass, that type of thing. I don't think so. It's probably the odds are we're talking about, a plastic cup. Yeah.
probably,
It's you can tell it's a plastic cup because it has the bumps on it.
okay, there you go.
The bumps on that, because it's they're very distinct plastic cups also because they have a wider brim. The shape is not like a normal glass.
Gotcha. Okay.
I don't even know the right term for it. It like expands towards the top, so it has a wider brim than the inside of it. Yeah,
All
but
right.
I mean, Sally just looks completely in shock at the end of this little
Yeah.
conversation. She never thought about this. Apparently Joe is not like Harry.
No.
Joe doesn't mind cuddling all night. So what can you do? And then we get a shot of the plane landing,
Yeah.
and we can see once again that it is United Airlines. I mean, last week when they got on the plane, we saw that they were in the United Airlines area of the of the airport. It was of LaGuardia
Yeah.
when they were leaving.
And it's just, in a movie, there are people who pay attention to these little details in the script.
Yes.
Because one, I getting back to the more important subject of airliners, I got a little nostalgic. Those 80s era vibrant colors on the United flights, they
Yes.
nowadays they look really drab.
Is it
Like,
because they're just like worn out?
no, I think they went with their current design on their planes is kind of sterile. I don't know, just air again, we're commenting how air travel was a lot different and it was a lot more exciting, and you kind of see it in the paint job of that United 737. It's red, white, and blue, and it's bold. And now a United Airlines jet sort of just looks like a package being delivered to you. Just
Right.
United. But c'est la vie.
Right. Exactly. Nothing you can do about that. And then the shot changes, and
Yeah.
we're in the middle of the airport, whichever airport
Yes.
this might be. Again, as I mentioned, according to the script, it's They mentioned last week that they were on their way to Washington, so it's probably National or Reagan, something like that, which will hopefully, come up again next season when we have terrorists in a Washington D.C. airport, not in
Yeah.
1982. So I think Harry
Was
and
it,
Sally are safe.
yeah. Was it in 89 would have been Dulles, because that's the
It was Dulles.
one,
It was Dulles. It
it
was
was
Dulles.
Dulles.
Right.
Yeah, 'cause that was my one. I was lazy. I didn't look it up. But when you see him on the People Mover, I say, "Oh, that looks like Dulles." And so there it is in the script. They're flying to Washington. And now
Yes.
this is my huge backstory. This is what I'm putting my money down on. Sally is dressed like a nerd because she's going to interview somebody in Washington, somebody important.
Ooh.
And so that's why she's dressed,
Maybe
because
Paul Simon.
wow, could
The
be.
no, the Senator Paul Simon,
Yeah, Senator
not
Simon. Yeah.
because Senator Paul Simon was known for his bow ties. So there you
Very
go.
good. And he
She's
was, yeah,
a
there you
thing, a
go.
thing.
Because
Great minds,
that was
great
one,
minds.
yeah. Great much, yeah. That was one little thing. I mean, Sally, in the rest of the movie, she has kind of a cool, contemporary, sophisticated look. But yeah, she has this very formal looking suit, and it's like, what's up with that? That does not look like something the character would wear. And it's like, ah, okay. She's flying to Washington. She's doing possibly an interview. I like the Paul Simon angle, because he was a big Democratic front runner at the time, as I recall. I think in 84 he was, or maybe 88, but anyway, yeah, I like Paul Simon being the possibly, or perhaps the Gipper himself. I don't know, but I think that is why Sally is dressed as she is,
Okay,
and
that
she has a lot of hairspray.
yes. Well, we know that she's still the hairspray still hasn't worn off from 1977, when she was in the car. So you never know. So
Exactly.
again, we see them on the People Mover. We see Sally just standing there reading a magazine, which I gotta tell you, from what we know of Sally, it doesn't make sense that she's reading a magazine the way she's reading it. We have bent pages. She's folded over the, she's a little too anal retentive to be reading a magazine like this.
It's funny. I thought about just, how long is that People Mover? And well, actually, let's again
Well, first of
do
all,
a deep dive. Okay.
on the commentary, it mentions the fact that this was done in one tracking shot. And
Okay.
they film this numerous times in order to get the perfect one. There are no cuts
Okay.
in this whole scene of the two of them that goes from today into tomorrow.
Okay.
But it's great the way that it's
Yeah.
filmed. So
It just
Harry just comes out of the background once again, like he did last week.
right.
We had
Yeah.
the point where Joe and Sally are sitting there kissing, and then Harry just like comes from the back. You didn't even, it's sort of that you don't expect him, but you expect him at the same time. So he's walking along and he catches up to her and just like looks at her. And
Yeah.
she's on the People Mover reading her magazine. Isn't it etiquette that you're supposed to stand on the left and walk on the right? Isn't
That
it?
is, I think, yeah, I think that's so. She is tech standing on the left.
That's right.
It does, and further, I did freeze frame. It looks
No,
like
she's
she's
standing on
reading,
the right.
but no, is it? Yeah. I'm reversing it.
Right, exactly. Well, because you're looking at it. She's on
Yeah.
your left, but she's on
We're.
her right. But it doesn't matter because there are people standing on both sides, and Harry's the only one who's walking in between everyone.
Yeah.
The way
And
that he's doing it, And he walks along this People Mover, catches up to her, and then casually just stands next to her. And then she looks down at him, somewhat shocked
Yeah.
that he has caught up with her.
I yeah. I think she, yeah. I think she might be reading the magazine because she, like, you know, as a way of like trying to send a message, like, if in case he does catch up, like, I'm ignoring you.
Well, she does a great job of that this entire minute, you know.
Yeah.
And then Harry once again starts talking to her, and he goes, "Staying over?" And she like gives like a huff and says, "Yes."
Yeah.
He goes, "Would you like to have dinner? Just friends." And then she like looks at him in a very strange way, you know. And then she turns to him and says, "I thought you didn't believe men and women could be friends." Now, this goes back to what we were saying yesterday. You know, she distinctly still remembers that conversation from 5 years earlier. Yeah. You know, it's been ingrained in her mind, this whole thing. And then Harry goes, "When did I say that?" She goes, "On the ride to New York." Now, when else could it have been? That's the only time they've known each other that she could have heard him say something like that. And then Harry shakes his head and goes, no, I never said that. And then there's a little bit of a beat and he goes, "Yeah, that's right." You're right. They can't be friends. Unless both of them are involved with other people, then they can. This is an amendment to the earlier rule. If the two people are in relationships, the pressure of possibility of involvement is lifted. And then he like looks like you see him move his head back and forth. And he's like thinking through this whole thing. And, you know, Sally just is trying to ignore him the whole time. You know, you can see that she, you know, just continues to look straight ahead. She's obviously listening to what he's saying, but she's not really paying attention to him. You know, and as he discusses it, she like every so often gives him a little bit of a glance, you know, like looks right at him like, "Why are you bothering me?" And then he basically says, "Well, that doesn't work either, because what happens then is the person you're involved with can't understand why you need to be friends with the person you're just friends with. Like, it means something is missing from their relationship. And why do you have to go outside and get it? Then when you say, no, it's not true, nothing is missing from the relation," and then it gets cut off. You know, so he once again does a nice job of, you know, imparting on everyone, you know, these great philosophies of life that Harry has, which make sense and don't make sense at the same time. Mm-hmm. You know, there's logic to the illogical way of looking at all these things, the way that he gives them off. And apparently this is really Rob Reiner's personality, that Rob Reiner acts this way and does things like this and talks about these type of situations. You know, that's where the whole thing came from. You know, Nora Ephron sat down with Rob Reiner and they put this thing together based on, you know, observations that the two of them have on life and, you know, relationships and stuff like that. You know, so it's great that we can see, though, that Sally is trying to find a way to get rid of him. She, you know, she, mm-hmm. It's as if she sees him as this like leech trying to, you know, you know, he's following her and he keeps talking and, you know, she's like, you know, "Get away from me. I don't want to."
Yeah.
No. So.
He's, you know, I think he's, you know, he's, again, he's sort of playing it, you know, like he should be arguing this in front of the Supreme Court.
Yes.
You know, I think he's trying to, almost like he's trying to confuse her or throw her off. It's like, you know, "I'm still not going to have dinner with you." I think that's the bottom line. You know?
Basically.
I think he's just trying every angle here. I think this version of Harry, his, even with his engagement, his motives here are not the noblest.
No. And if Sally was smarter, she would have just said, "Oh, I already have plans." And that would have been it. You know, but she's not even trying to be polite about it. She's just saying, "No, I don't want to have anything to do with you."
Yeah.
You know, it would have been easier to say, "Oh, well, you know, I'm meeting with my friend, or I'm going back later today," or she's volunteering too much information.
Even by just her
slight, you know, yes, that's too much information. Like, she doesn't want anything to do with him. So why are we even engaging him?
Yeah. Exactly. This is, you know, even though there's really no no clue in the very first encounter. I think on some level there is some attraction, some sort of interest. I don't know, on whatever, because she keeps engaging with him.
Yes.
You know, and it's just like,
but maybe it's just her politeness. Maybe that's what it comes down to. It's not.
Could be. But, I think she just, because it should just be like, you know, go away, creep. That's about it. But
exactly.
She keeps, that's my take is.
She finds him charming, I guess.
On some level, and you go way back to, the beginning, as they pulled up to the diner, they had that debate about Casablanca. They were taking, very adversarial point of views, mm-hmm. but there was this, if he really bothered her, she shouldn't even be talking about Casablanca, it's just
right.
Like, there's a diner in an hour or something, but, so I think that's, there's on some level, she would never admit it, but I think on some level there's something about him that she finds interesting.
Right. So you're saying there's something about Harry?
There's something about Harry. Yes. Then we could analyze this.
That's right. Or that.
or that, either way. But we have a number of years to before that develops.
Yes.
But
correct. All right. You have anything else you want to say about this movie before we get into the script?
That's it.
Okay. So there are a few minor discrepancies here. I'm not even going to go into them. There's just one blatant one that I like.
What's that?
It says the flight attendant announces that everybody should fasten seatbelts in preparation for landing in Washington, D.C. So, again, it would have given us a little more of a hint. Just say we heard the ding, which they could have worked it that in that Sally is now relieved that they're about to, land.
Yeah.
She's finally able to get away from him, that type of thing. So.
Again, it's the minutia of filmmaking. The cast and crew went to Washington for a day to shoot that people mover scene, when they could have just as easily gone to, JFK, so there's JFK, and they could have found an empty terminal at JFK or at LaGuardia and just, okay, here we are. That's where you put up a sign that says, Paris or something like that.
Exactly.
Quick little side note. Years ago, I went to the Burbank Airport? It's now Bob Hope Airport. But at the time, I was with my uncle, who's a movie buff, and he said, "No, you're in a famous airport, really? Yeah, because this is Hollywood's airport, and nine times out of ten, you watch an old movie, and maybe you see that title." Istanbul or, Tokyo. And it's like, yep, this is the airport. The front of this airport's used all the time. Really? Wow. that was a long time ago. That's all I got.
Okay, great. So
that's it.
No problem. So every Tuesday we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track, Dating or Courting Edition, where my guests will leave some sort of story, adventure, misadventure, anecdote, something that happened to them over the course of life that is somewhat related to either dating or courting. So, Brett, you have a story for us?
I do, because there are certain Harry meeting Sally elements to my own meeting my wife, in that this is straight out of a movie, that the first time we met, we had a mutual friend who was a bit like a movie character. He sort of looked like Austin Powers. He is quite a character. And, he knew both of us, and he was trying to play matchmaker. And I remember him saying, "Oh, you got to meet my friend Audra Wolfman. I went to grad school with her. You'd get a kick out of her." And meanwhile, I found out much later, he was saying the same thing to her. "Oh, you got to meet this guy, Brett Stillo." And,
such a character. He's a count too.
He's a count. He's a count. He's a count. Yes. He might have actually said that. So yeah. So, the stars aligned, but they were the wrong stars. So we were at a nightclub, and both of us were there, and our friend, his name was Troy. Troy Cook, and it was like, "Hi, Troy. Now's my chance." And it's, you know, I think Manoor Efron wrote this night because we were both on. Well, she was on a terrible date. I was being rejected by somebody. So Troy has this moment. Brett, this is Otter. Otter, this is Brett, and we just sort of just like, you know, nodded and like, yeah, right, great, yeah. So that was our first meeting, and then we did not encounter each other again for about 6 months after that. But that was our and so it is kind of like a little like
very cool. So you and Audra should have been one of the documentary couples. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah, we have, yeah. I'll tell you part two on Thursday.
Okay.
Although I could get, you have a choice. You want to hear how, you want to hear part two of my court trip with my wife, or the time I dated a French stripper?
Whatever you want to tell. You know, you
know. Well, so figure, that's Thursday. That's Thursday. But
maybe it's the same story. Yeah,
I could tie it in. I get that's the subplot. But yeah, in retrospect, it was very much like a scene that could have been written by Nora Ephron.
Wow.
Where it was, you know, two people who, and here's this, our poor Troy was like, finally, I'm going to introduce them. And, it, you know, it was probably like Jess and Marie. You know, it's like, here it is. This is the moment. And I was like, oh, damn. We were like cats. Like, you want to play with us? No. But it worked out.
Hey,
it worked out.
That's the important thing.
Thursday.
That's the important thing. All right. So, great. So, Brett, you want to once again tell people how they can get in touch with you?
You can get in touch with me many ways. One, you can listen to me on many, many podcasts that I've been in. They're all movie podcasts, though. 5 minutes.
What's wrong with that?
5 minutes. Nothing's wrong with that. I don't know, my own, I don't just being snarky, I guess. 5 minutes of Bonsai, 5 minutes of Trouble. I'll give a shout out to my good friend, Pete Mummert, who dragged me into this, the Indiana Jones Minute. That was my very first appearance, and I kind of got hooked from there. Jim O'Kane, Airport Minute, and, you know, many other shows that he's done. And, and, you know, this is my third, Billy Crystal related podcast.
Ooh.
I was on the Princess Bride Minute, and I was on the Spinal Tap Minute. So this is some kind of triumvirate. I should have saved that.
And did you have any minutes with Billy Crystal in those two movies? Because he's in, this is Spinal Tap, if I remember correctly, he has one small scene, and in the Princess Bride, you know, he has a few big scenes, but, you know, they're few and far between.
Let me try. You know, I should be talking about this tomorrow, when I think we're going to talk
So I'll let you think about it. I'll let you think about it till tomorrow. How's that?
Let me think about that. I need time to sleep on it.
No problem. All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter, or you can go directly to my website, movierobminute.com. So until tomorrow, I'll have what she's having.
I'll have what she's having too.
Gave me a thrill. With all your faults, I love you still. It had to be you. Wonderful you. Had to be you.